Okay, calling to order the regular meeting of the Oceana Community Service District for Wednesday, November 28th. May I please have the roll call?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Vigia?
Here.
Director Rapoco?
Here.
Vice President Austin?
Here.
President Wing?
Here. We all raise for the flag salute.
Attention salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Moving on now to the agenda review. Do we have anything, Madam Accountant? Anyone here?
I move we approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
It's moved and seconded we approve the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. We're going to change the order of things. I'm now going to call for public comment for items not on the agenda. The public comment period provides opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. So anybody want to come forward first?
Good evening. My name is Lucia Casalinuovo, Oceana Beach Community Association. First of all, I never had the chance to tell you how much I really think you made a good choice appointing it months ago when you appointed the new board members, and how happy I am with the new board. Thank you so very much. I also want to tell you how much I enjoyed the outreach event. I think it was the most helpful and informative and interesting event I've ever been in a long time. The presenters were excellent. The information was very relevant. And it was a great opportunity to meet new people and to create some community bonds. So I would like to see those happen more often. Maybe even just in 6 months, it would be nice to have an update on all of those projects and things that people talked about, like the levees and the drainage project and the flood issue. The other thing I would like to tell you is I was reading a letter from the County Council to Parks and the Coastal Commission as a County Council comment and feedback to the work plan, the PWP, the Parks is working on for Pismo Beach and Oceano ODSVRA. And I don't know if I have time to read the letter, but the OCSD is listed by County Council as an agency that is directly impacted by the management of ODSVRA. I can just read you briefly when he says he says right here, the new plan, okay, first of all, there are impacts to Oceano residents because of the DSVRA. You know, the noise, the traffic, I'm trying to make it this short. Residents must deal with increased crime rate, additional trash, and periods of significant noise. In addition, local first responders and hospitals are impacted as a result of the operation of the ODSVRA. The new plan says a city council, this is city council, these are not my words, the new plan should mitigate the known and existing impacts to the residents of Oceano and surrounding areas by compensating the agencies that are responsible for dealing with these impacts. For example, the county, the APCD, the OCSD, the City of Grover Beach, etc. The amounts paid to each agency should be negotiated between the state and each agency, and these amounts should be codified prior to the approval of the PWP. So what I'm saying is maybe you want to think about making a list of impacts of the ODSVRA on Oceano and how you are connected to those, because it looks like, you know, it might be a good thing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Next. I have a slip here from Art Vega.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Art Vega. My wife, Angie Vega, is right here with me. We live at 1929 Wilmar. We've been here about 7 years. We love Oceano. It's beautiful. Moved from the Bakersfield Taft area. You know how the weather is there. But anyhow, we're trying to do a 1,200 square foot addition onto our home right now, and we've been jumping through hoops. I don't know if anybody else has tried to add on or build onto their homes, but it's pretty expensive, and there's a lot of rules and regulations you have to go through. But anyway, my concern tonight is the county asked me for a letter of intent from you guys, from the water and sewer, and I thought this was going to be an easy process, but since I already have water and sewer at this location, but it seems like it's going to be there's a lot more involved with it. Because I asked for this letter about, I think it was on the 31st, and I barely received a letter back today stating what the requirements are. We've talked to Pablo about this before already, too. But I'm just, my main concern is I'm just adding on to my home. It's about 1,200 square feet, and I already have water and sewer at my property, and I'm just wondering why I can't. Is it standard procedure that this? I don't know. Have you guys received this letter that I got from Pavo or the district, whoever it is, stating what the requirements are? If you haven't, you should probably read it. But it says that what I want to make clear tonight is why can't I use the existing water that I have and sewer connection that I have? Versus, you know, I've got two options here, it looks like, that he gave me. One was to reroute this all the way to Wilmar Street, which doesn't make any sense to me because I already have water and sewer, and I've lived there for 7 years and I've never had any issues until this addition came up and the county asked me to get this letter of intent. So that's the first question that I would like asked or answered. And also, there is an easement. It's not an easement. It's not off of 19th Street. There's an opening there that we've come in and out of for, like I said, the last 7 years. The people before us have used it. And there's another entrance that goes to my backyard, to where the back of the house is. And we've used it for 7 years. I know all the workers that work there. Anytime there's a problem, I said, hey, if you need me to move my truck or any vehicle or trim any trees, I'm more than happy to do it for you. I've never had a problem there, but now it's saying that this letter is telling me that they don't want me to use those accesses anymore, and that's another thing that I would like addressed. Why all of a sudden now, when all I need is a water hookup, which is really easy to do, and tie into the existing sewer, which is really easy to do. So that's what I want to answer tonight.
Okay, the answer I'll give you, you won't really appreciate, but I think this needs to go on another agenda because we can't act tonight mm-hmm. on any items that are not on the agenda.
Okay.
But I would hope that we could put it on the agenda or follow up on it or deal with it administratively.
Well, Mr. Vega can certainly, appeal the intent to serve letter to your board.
Mm-hmm. So whatever he would like to do, have it.
Yeah, how long is this going to take? Because, I mean, I've had to borrow money, and I'm making payments to pay for all of this. Is it going to take, like I said, I've already waited a month just to get this far on this letter. How much longer do you think it's possibly going to take? Is it?
I couldn't say tonight because we can't give you an opinion because it's not on the agenda.
Okay.
I mean, that's the law that we're bound to.
I understand that. Okay.
Yeah, but we can follow up on it, and I just don't know because we have one more meeting this year mm-hmm. after this one. So if you go back and talk to Mr. Ogren, I think we can figure it out from there. How's that?
I I guess. Is that standard procedure? Or
yeah, that's all we can do.
That's all we can do?
That's all we can do. I'm sorry. Thank you. Next. Anyone else? Okay, then we will go into closed session. Mr. Minery?
Okay. Madam President, would you take public comment on closed session, please?
Yes. Does anyone have any comments on closed session? Public comment on closed session? Seeing no one come forward.
The board will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54957, Public Employment of the General Manager.
Second.
What do you do? Open in the blind? Call a meeting back to order at 6:29. May we have a report out of closed session, please?
The report out of closed session is no reportable action.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll now move on to special presentations and reports. Mr. Maraschino, would you please come forward?
Good evening, Board. Tony Maraschino. All right, for the past couple weeks, I'll give you the update on Lopez. It's at 39.9% full, which is just over 19,700 acre feet. We've had 12 work orders, 8 USAs, 9 customer service calls. We had 2 after-hours call-outs. One was for an unlock, and the other one was Thanksgiving Day for a line that ruptured, going to 2 homes. So we reinstalled 2 individual lines to the 2 homes, and they were out of water for about 2 hours that day. All right. Finished out meter reads, door hangers, sewer jetting. They had the open house on Saturday. We had lock-offs, re-reads, highs, lows, notifications, little maintenance at the yard. The bridge is complete now, and all the extra parts got returned back to the company. Lift station, we had a motor that went down. They got clogged due to the high traffic at the park and everything. Basically, they had to pull it, just clear it. A lot of debris, a lot of, like, Swiffer-type material that the motor can't really chew up.
Where was this?
The lift station. So Swiffer kind of material, rags, it can't tear it up enough to get it up and out of the wet well.
Did you say that was related to the park?
Well, just the high influx of the park there, because it does feed into our lift station. Mm-hmm. And we are noticing, you know, higher, bigger weekends, more debris coming into it. Yes. That's pretty much covers everything for the past couple weeks. Any questions?
I have one that I don't know whether it's to you or to Mr. Ogren about the low-level response plan. Is it activated yet? Doesn't it activate at 20,000 acre feet?
Maybe we can cover at that during district priorities.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah.
Tony, you're going to be doing some work on 23rd and...
Correct. So 23rd and Paso, there's a county project coming up that they're going to do a kind of like a drainage infiltrator there at that location because of the residents that does flood. That's going to require the district to lower its utilities. And the utilities that we have there are three valve boxes for valves. Need to be lowered anywhere from 2 inches to, I believe, 16 inches. And then we also have a sewer manhole that has to be lowered just about 2 inches. So the district's going to take care of that in-house.
How much is that going to cost?
It's predominantly going to be covered by, the labor's all going to be covered by the existing operations budget.
Yeah.
You probably have a little bit of supplies.
I mean, our labor and everything's covered. It's already budgeted in. Material-wise, off the top of my head, I would say under $1,000.
Oh, okay. I just, the county coming and doing things with our roads and forcing us to do things, but this is for
We're pretty much keeping everything in-house for the most part.
Yeah, it's just, it still costs.
One thing after another, yes.
Yeah, with the county. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Questions?
No. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you. Mr. Ogren, I see you're up.
Certainly. President White, members of the board, members of the public. So Five Cities Fire Authority is going to have a special meeting on Monday, and I think, President White, you've probably been informed of that. The purpose of that special meeting is so that Five Cities Fire Authority accepts the grant, the NPP grant, that's going to be funding our generator, because your board previously approved the issuance of the purchase order for the generator. We sat down with the county Office of Emergency Services, Scott Milner, on Monday, and Chief Lieberman, in order to find out how is the money going to flow. And so Five Cities Fire has to accept the grant revenues and then authorize Lieberman to reimburse OCSD. So appreciate their work effort in helping to coordinate that. I'm not sure if anybody picked up the interview that Megan Healy with KSBY did. And I felt like that interview was good altogether. She came out, and I met her at the site where we have a leak that's going on. And my original response, my initial response was that I wasn't going to grant a video interview. And she was a little bit taken aback. But what I did is I had several documents. The grants we have obtained in order to address the leak detection system, a number of the different board items, including your board's approval of initiating the project for the line replacement at that location, and probably spent 20 to 30 minutes with her walking through the district's efforts over the last couple of years in order to address our waterline deferred infrastructure. And she was very responsive and, you know, it was a good conversation and everything. But I really wanted to make sure that I had that opportunity to spend the time and walk her through what we're doing. And I gave her copies of, you know, probably four different board items over the last couple of years. And then once we went through all of that information, then, of course, I granted the video interview. I just wanted to really make sure that I was able to take the time with her to walk through what the district is actually doing. During that interaction, two property owners came up and were a little bit, one of them was a little bit assertive, and so then she actually stepped back and I started dialoguing with the property owners, and one of them made the statement of, well, it sounds like you guys have that under control. There's going to be new water lines, so that's good. I felt it was a good interview overall. I'm going to end up following up with her as we take different actions just to keep her in the loop. And then, of course, made sure to plug the Saturday event, the open house event as well, which I understand she included in either what was on the web or during the television item. And then on Saturday, the next day, or 2 days later, I can't remember, we had the open house. As you know, board members were there. Nicole is also sending a survey to all of the participants in order to, you know, get feedback on how that went. And obviously, there was some good public comment today. Legal counsel and I have continued to meet with the NCMA, the technical group, in coordination with the next court hearing in January. After the last board meeting, I also met with Five Cities Fire Authority managers again. And we were sort of talking about what's the near-term schedule in terms of actual board action. And we can talk about this in more during discussion on item 9D and the priorities. But we're starting to line up when we think the different governing boards are going to first start, you know, hearing about what we've been working on. Obviously, the two cities have to appoint their or swear in the new city councils, as we also have to swear in three of your board members. And we don't need to do that at a board meeting, so as soon as I have the final results from the county clerk, we can swear in at any time, you know, re-swear in or whatever. Again, I think we're going to start having the public discussions on the Five Cities Fire Authority negotiations pretty soon, because the cities, again, need to swear in December and January, and they've got some other work to do. But it's going to be early 2019. And then on the landscape maintenance, I've done an additional – at the last board meeting, I reported my initial discussions with Dave Flynn at County Public Works, and I've been meaning to get a letter off to him. I wanted to follow up with him verbally first in order to confirm who contacts were at Caltrans and whether or not they had followed up since the last conversation. But with Thanksgiving week and people taking vacations, and then this week they're off on a conference. So I made some outreach efforts, but I haven't actually been able to touch base with them. And with that, the remaining items are really agenda items. Be glad to answer any questions.
Questions? I did see that TV interview. I thought it was very good, but the one thing that it just made me a little sad was the one homeowner who said, why didn't we just patch the line?
Oh.
I mean, a simple idea, you can put a rubber patch on a water hose, but a service line going to a number of houses that's decaying,
yeah,
there is no economic efficiency in just patching it. It just doesn't happen that way.
And Tony can, you know, speak if your board wants to, about they have been out on that water line on numerous occasions, and a 2-inch galvanized line that's 60-plus years old, the ability just to do the patchwork is pretty difficult.
Yeah.
Do we have the date when it'll be, when we're going to be able to fix it? Do we know when?
Cannon's done the basic design work. I anticipate they're going to be submitting encroachment permits in the next week or so. I've engaged with Terra Verde, which is an environmental consulting firm, to make sure that even though we look at it, the project is categorically exempt from a CEQA standpoint, we also have to make sure that we're cleared on coastal development permits, which we don't envision any issues there. We're not in any wetlands or any sensitive biological for fish and wildlife or fish and game. We need to verify we're under the threshold limits for APCD, Air Pollution Control District. So Terra Verde will be running through that checklist for us. Essentially, as soon as Cannon is ready to submit the encroachment permit, one has to go to Caltrans and the other one has to go to the county. And that way we'll be doing our, you know, checking the box on environmental compliance. But there's no reason to imagine that we're going to have any issues there based on the nature of the projects. As a result, I'm going to make sure for the December 12th board meeting that I have the appropriate – I need to double-check on what the board authorizations have been so far. And so on December 12th, if I need additional board authorizations, I'll seek them so that we can go out and get that out to bid. As I previously mentioned, I want to get all the bid documents together in December. So if we're bidding in January, then I would anticipate we could have the work starting in February, weather permitting.
Very good. So.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Okay, moving on to Board of Directors and Outside Committee Reports. Let's go down my list, Director Villa.
I just wanted to say that I attended the Saturday community event, and I was very impressed. Just like our Lucia was mentioning, it was very professional, very informative, and maybe we can have more of those, like she was saying. That's it.
Director Gibson?
Thank you. I have a couple things to report on. I recently attended the grand opening of the Compagas digestion plant, which is close to the San Luis Airport. And it's exciting for us to be associated with this cutting-edge technology. It's the first digester of its kind in the United States. And it basically processes organics and food and green wastes, and in the end produces electricity with byproducts of the compost and liquid fertilizer. So it was very, very interesting and equally exciting. They gave us a really good lunch. And then I attended Zone 3 Water Advisory Board. And we did discuss the low reservoir response plan, in that we are just under the 20,000 acre feet mark. And essentially, we're waiting for more data for our January meeting to discuss it further. And then if we approve that, then it would go next to the supervisors for them to enact. So. And then we also discussed, at the Zone 3 meeting, we discussed cloud seeding. And the basics on that would be a five-month program by aircraft. And that would cost approximately $268,000. We discussed maybe being able to partner with Santa Barbara County. And with the cloud seeding, they're predicting that we would receive 9 to 17% more rain. Not sure how they come up with those figures, but that's what's stated. And tomorrow night, I have another meeting on the cloud seeding with Zone 3.
Director Gibson, do you know if they're planning any community outreach to educate
It will go before the supervisors, so I think that would be the place for the public to talk about that.
Will there be any sort of a presentation to explain how it works or anything like that? That's what I'm curious about, because I don't really know how it works, and I'm sure a lot of people don't either.
So. I have some emails that discuss they use silver iodide. And I have a few emails on that. If I can send them to whoever wants to see
okay,
those.
Okay, but there's nothing formal planned.
Not that I know of.
Public outreach.
Not that I know of.
I believe they've already completed the mitigated negative deck on it. The Board of Supervisors was poised to approve it last summer, and then they pulled it from the agenda because they didn't know where it was going to be implemented. Discussions had initially been that the Nacimiento participants in Monterey County might participate, as well as Santa Barbara County. But there was uncertainty about the project implementation, so the board just had it pulled. And at this point in time, it appears that it's most likely going to be focused on Lopez. And
yeah,
maybe
just zone 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think when it was discussed, different supervisors had different points of view, and maybe they couldn't come to an agreement.
And my understanding was that your last Zone 3 advisory committee, there was a number of questions that came up as well,
yes.
Which is why they're reconsidering it. They're having a special meeting tomorrow night.
Right, yes. There were environmental concerns, and, you know, there were several questions about that.
So. The 9 to 17% estimate is based on a historical evaluation of how much do they believe it increased rainfall in prior events. It's a little, you know, I don't know how much of that is science and how much of it is art, but.
And I believe San Luis Obispo County did do cloud seeding, I want to say in the 90s, 3 years or something.
Yeah.
But it's been a while.
Two different approaches on the applications. One is you actually put a plane or drones up into the air and then seed them with silver iodide. The second approach is you just have land sites and then you shoot almost like, I think about fireworks, but they're not fireworks, but you know, they shoot it up into the clouds.
But then the ground method, that requires easements probably. So I think it's a lot more involved. I think that we're focused on just the aircraft.
The aircraft version.
To be quicker off the block.
So Monterey County has done cloud seeding before as well. And the biggest concern that I've heard regarding cloud seeding is if you have areas that have been burned by fires and what kind of impact might that be. In Monterey County, they had, this is probably between 5 and 10 years ago, they had implemented the program, and then they were going to implement it in a subsequent year after a major fire. And so the individuals who lived in and around the burn area went to Monterey County and were concerned about whether or not it would increase risks of landslides and other types of things. And that's the case that I understand that really then kicked people into environmental review prior to actually implementing it. And I'm not sure, though, what the mitigations are in the negative deck that the county is going to be following. I would imagine that it's assessing whether or not there are burn areas that they need to be worried about.
And do you know what the plan is for funding that?
It would be out of the Zone 3 budget. We pay for 6.9% of it, so that would be about a $15,000 impact to the district. And at the last Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee meeting, we identified that it could be done within existing budget.
Anything else? Okay. Cynthia?
I don't have anything.
Linda?
Nothing.
Well, I had a very uneventful fire meeting, except for it was the last meeting for both Barbara Harmon and John Scholes. And it was kind of bittersweet for Mr. Scholes, the mayor of Grover Beach, who was the mayor of Grover Beach when, or on the city council, I'm not sure which, when the Five Cities Fire Authority first started, and he was very involved in the initial work of putting it together. So, but it wasn't their last meeting because we have to get together Monday. But it was ceremonially their last meeting. Okay, anything else?
Nothing.
Oh, I was going to say that I was also very impressed by the outreach. I was there. And I wonder if it, I know it would be take staff time and everything, but I wonder if it could be created as a yearly event with and through the years you could maybe draw more people. I thought the attendance was great. But if we had it once a year or something, if it could be developed into, I don't know, it's just something to look at.
Yeah, we can certainly discuss that more. The other thing that we might need to do is have focus meetings again, mm-hmm. right? So that, I felt, was a good event to having a really broad range of participants and agencies to demonstrate to the community a lot of the different efforts that are underway. We know that in 2019 we're going to have specific things that we really need to focus in, like the infrastructure funding plan. So I think that the thoughts are is that if once a year we have a broader based one, that especially if it's in advance like this one is of the next calendar year, and then during the year follow up with some, you know, again, specific items as we move forward, because our deferred infrastructure and how are we going to do our water line replacements is certainly going to be, you know, a big issue for the community. So it's a little bit of a contrast to the type of an open house, which was broad, and we didn't really get into any real details on any of the topics, but we covered a lot of topics. So I'm anticipating some of our next ones have to be focused, detail-oriented on, you know, some of the high priorities we're working on.
Thank you. Calling for public comment on special presentations and reports. Special comments? Nope. Moving on to consent agenda, item 8. Comments? Public comment on 8, consent agenda? Seeing no one come forward, does anybody have anything?
Make a motion. We approve the consent agenda. Items 8, A and B.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 5-0. This is going quickly. Moving on to business items, I will again call for public comment. And seeing no one come forward, we will move on to item 9A, consideration of correspondence on increase to state water costs for 2019 with options for reducing other water fund costs and board of directors direction as deemed appropriate. And I'll get my glasses out right now.
President White, members of the board, members of the public, you know, the staff report provides a lot of the details associated with this, so I'm going to sort of run through a number of bullets that I've developed here. We do not yet know what the fiscal impact is going to be. County Public Works indicated that we would have the invoice next week, so we'll have it prior to the December 12th meeting. So I can report back on December 12th as to the specific fiscal impacts and seek a budget adjustment at that point in time. The state water contractors, there's 29 state water contractors, including San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. The contractors every year fund independent auditors to go in there and audit the Department of Water Resources on the state water project. Those auditors are engaged right now at looking at this specific issue. What it clearly appears to be is a lack of communication between what's called SWAPL, which is the State Water Project Analysis Office, and they're the ones who do the number crunching on the costs and send out the bills, and a lack of communication between SWAPL and the operations. And what happened was around 2015 or so, I'm not exactly clear. We're in the height of the drought, and Santa Barbara County asked the Department of Water Resources to not shut down the project for maintenance purposes. So every year the project gets shut down. It can be up to a month. Well, they'll go through and they'll do all of their maintenance work. Our Central Coast Aqueduct has 3 major pumping facilities, and so that's often a lot part of their maintenance. Well, due to the drought and the need for continuous deliveries of water, Santa Barbara County asked to not have it shut down, and it was not shut down, and therefore the maintenance costs in that particular year were relatively low. I believe it's 2015 because on page 18 of 62 of your agenda, it shows in 2015 that the actual charges were around $668,000. Well, what happened then is that in 17 and 18, SWAPO took those actual operating costs from 2015 and used them to project the estimates in 2017 and 2018. And those estimates were woefully low then because the operations did go in and do their work. And so a large part of this bill is really just to catch up for underbilling that the Department of Water Resources did in 2017 and 2018. And then, of course, it appears that they have more reasonable estimates for 2019. But in terms of this provision of adjustments from estimated bills to actual costs, we don't really have any discretion on it. And therefore, the issue becomes how are we going to actually deal with these unanticipated costs in our current year's budget. As part of our audit every year, we know that we have a deposit on account with the county for state water of approximately $191,000. That hasn't been part of our reserves because we haven't considered that to be a current resource available for budgetary purposes. and we've treated it as a non-current asset. My hope had been that, well, that would help funding of capital improvements down the road. But certainly, I've corresponded with the county. They've agreed to release the deposit to help pay for this bill, and that's a big chunk. So it's not going to have any effect of our current assets and our current reserves, but it is going to result in a $191,000 decrease in our long-term assets. That's the most significant action that is going to be necessary. And then in the staff report on page 14 of 62, I also identified other couple cost-saving efforts: deferral of the assistant general manager engineer position until next fiscal year, and then potential savings from unpaid leave that I might take, which is actually subject of agenda item 9B. No action is necessary tonight. I just wanted to make sure to have an informative item in front of your board. The action item is really going to come when we get the invoice, get it in front of you, get the authorization to pay the invoice, and then have an appropriate budgetary adjustment at this time. But the table on page 14 of 62 really lays out the strategy and the remaining costs then that I estimate based on low-end cost estimates and high-end cost estimates that we'll have to address in the 2019-2020 budget is a range of about $15,500 to about $60,000. And that's going to be dependent on what is our actual bill going to be, and then, primarily dependent on what our actual bill is going to be. So I came up with the low-end cost estimate based on the county indicated $2 million higher billing this year than it was last year for all of the state water contractors. There's 4,830 acre feet for all of the San Luis Obispo contractors. We have 750, so that ratio then provided a low-end cost estimate of $310,000. The high-end cost estimate is just essentially $500 an acre foot times our 750 acre feet. I also know that the county has approximately $3.4 million in reserves for state water project, and so I'm sure that they're going to be looking at that as a way of also mitigating some of the bills for not only Oceano, but for Morro Bay and Pismo Beach and the rest. So hopefully, I'm relatively confident that this low-end cost estimate and high-end cost estimate is reasonable. You know, hopefully the number might actually be lower if the county can utilize some of those existing reserves. The timing of that isn't good because the invoices are supposed to be paid on January 1st, and the county really doesn't have the ability to go to the Board of Supervisors and cancel reserves in that type of time period. So what I encourage them to do was to consider the utilization of reserves and to then maybe put it into the 2019-20 budget for the county. And if that's the case, then we would see a reduced bill on for the July 1st bill. So there's a number of different variables, but I wanted to get it in front of your board as an informational item and then just be proactive and get ahead of those numbers, because the more we can do this year, especially with the utilization of that $191,000 and the deferral of the assistant GM district engineer, you know, get ahead of it so that we can, you know, deal with this as best as we can in the current fiscal year, and so that the impacts on next fiscal year will be minimized.
Yeah. The deposit with the county, so if we use that deposit, do we have to keep a deposit? Do we have to replace it down the road?
No, I don't believe we're going to have to replace it. Okay. The deposit was actually something that I took action on when I was wearing a hat, you know, that was different than the one today 10 years ago. And that was in a situation where Oceano was not complying with debt covenant requirements and was not raising its water rates to the degree necessary. And we were getting very little, if no feedback, this again when I was at the county, from Oceano about what it was doing. About that time, too, the bond interest rates had come down, so the bonds were getting refunded. Mm-hmm. So I just took the position. We got the $191,000 came as a rebate from Central Coast Water Authority, and I just took the position at that time as the public, I was probably a deputy director, maybe I was the director, that we were just going to hold on to that money due to Oceano's uncertainties. And so Oceano's situation has changed significantly from that status.
Did you put that hat on here?
Yeah, so I kind of reminded them that I kind of did it 10 years ago, so I should be able to undo it. But then, you know, sent an email and encouraged it and got positive feedback. They may want to have a letter from the board president requesting the refund of the deposit. They didn't indicate that to me in the response, but I think that, you know, all things considered, if they want that, then I'll just work with President White to do so.
Well, thank you.
I guess we should be very thankful we have that deposit up there.
You know, yeah, I guess I had foresight 10 years ago. I didn't know.
So it sounds like the state is saying, oopsie, we messed up for a couple, 3 years, and you've got a really big bill due to make it right in a very short amount of time. And I'm sure we're not the only ones in this boat trying to scramble to come up with a big chunk of money. So is there any effort to push back with the state and say, hey, you should let us pay this over time or
yes.
be a little more reasonable?
Yes. So the Central Coast Water Authority, which has about 90% of the flows through the coastal aqueduct, and Ray Stokes, who's their executive director and serves on a number of the committees, has, in some ways, Ray and CCWA represents both San Luis and Santa Barbara counties on these type of discussions. And he definitely, you know, inquired and pushed. Under the contracts, though, DWR does not have to be flexible. And then they become concerned that if they don't strictly comply with the contract, what might that mean in subsequent issues of bonds and credit ratings? So they want to, the feedback that I got is that they're going to strictly comply. There are different provisions in the contract when it comes to like construction of capital facilities, that if there's variances, that they can be amortized over the life of the project, which is to 2035. But they looked into it, and that doesn't apply in this situation. I anticipate that local, and so a lot of the Santa Barbara County agencies already understand what their situation is. I talked to their chief financial officer about 2 weeks ago, and she said that they're all prepared, you know, to deal with it. I think locally in San Luis Obispo County, the contractors here didn't pick up on this. I admit, with Director Colwell at the time, and we were at a state water contractors meeting, and it was lightly discussed. And I said, wait, what's, and, you know, so I was anticipating it, and that's why it was quick when we got this recent correspondence about our $191,000 deposit. My intuition is that Morro Bay and Pismo Beach may not yet understand what the fiscal implications are, and they both have, you know, significantly more state water than we do. I'm not sure how they're going to respond, but CCWA also sent me a lot of information that the auditors are going to be looking at on this, and we'll see what else might come out of it. But right now it just looks like it was an oversight on the billing and the lack of the billing office talking with the operations about what's going on. It really should have popped up to the analysis office when in 2015 operations was drastically under budget. You know, they should have said what happened, but they didn't. It's one of many things that state water contractors have over time been frustrated with the Department of Water Resources, and it's also you know, it's sort of symptomatic of why in the development of the twin tunnels that are anticipated to go underneath the Delta, Where that's not being implemented by the Department of Water Resources, DWR has agreed to allow a separate JPA, which is formed by the state water contractors. So this is certainly a significant issue to us. And I think, again, it's an example that other people in other portions of the state have felt before and have been frustrated with DWR.
I also wanted to mention that thanks for including this map in here. It's interesting that one of the pumping plants is called the Devil's Den.
I like that. Yeah, I was looking at that. What does do we get water that's stored at San Luis Reservoir?
Yes. Yeah, in fact, our water in storage, which I don't have the exact quantities right now, but we'll probably have, by the end of this year, at least 750 acre feet in storage, if not more. That's all stored at San Luis Reservoir. The coastal aqueduct essentially starts right near San Luis Reservoir.
Yeah, thanks for this map. This is very interesting, seeing how it all plays out.
Anything else?
So okay. As a side note, Devil's Den was the end of phase one of the coastal branch, was completed in the 1960s. And so from Devil's Den all the way down to Lake Kachuma, that was phase two, and that was constructed from around 1994 to 1997.
You don't have any history on that name, though.
Oh, on why it's called Devil's Den? I don't know. I see Badger Hill, too.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll inquire.
Well, it's between Avenel and Shannon. There's not much out there, so I don't know.
I think they got a little rain there today. Moving on. 9B, consideration of an amendment to the general manager's employment contract authorizing up to 20 hours per week of unpaid leave with proportional reduction of benefit accruals.
Thank you, President White and directors of the board. Before you hear on item 9B is a proposed amendment to the general manager's employment contract, which would essentially permit the general manager to take up to a maximum of 20 hours a week of unpaid leave with a corresponding reduction in salary and benefits. The result of this would be allow the general manager to take this time off with no pay, but with essentially zero impact on the district. In fact, the impact that it would have would be cost savings, which was also reflected as a potential benefit in your last item of 9A related to how to handle this, the new costs related to state water. To put it into kind of the easiest form, and your packet does have a red line of the amendments. This is essentially just amending sections 2, 5, and 6 of his employment agreement, and I'll just quickly run through so you understand how the contract itself is amended to accomplish this this ability for him to take the unpaid time. Now, there's no requirement that the general manager takes unpaid leave. He could take up to a maximum, but that could be anywhere between 0 and 20 at any given week, so it's not. It allows that type of flexibility. Section 2 of his contract would be amended simply to say that the original requirement that if this is a full-time job would be deleted and would permit him to take up to a maximum of 20 hours a week of unpaid leave. Section 5 is a section that deals with the general manager's salary, and it essentially is amended to state that Mr. Ogren's salary would remain unchanged at his current salary level, but would be reduced pro rata based on actual hours worked. So if he does take 10 hours a week or 20 hours a week, his salary is reduced in proportion to that. And to determine the how the proportionality is, how it is determined pro rata, is based on 40 hours a week as a full-time a job. So that 40-hour-a-week work week would be the baseline. Chapter 6 identifies the reduction in benefits that would occur. He would, general manager for time taken as unpaid leave. The district's CalPERS contributions would be reduced. Mr. Oakland's sick and vacation leave time would be reduced. His vacation accrual would be reduced. His sick leave accrual would be reduced. And also the district's contributions to health insurance would be reduced. So essentially, this is an amendment that would permit but not require Mr. Ogren to take up to 20 hours a week off, but save the district a corresponding amount of money in both salary and benefits. So if you have any questions, I'm available.
I think it all explains it. I don't have any.
Then I need a motion.
Do we need to make a motion to
amend?
I'll make a motion to approve the amendment to the general manager's employment contract authorizing up to 20 hours per week of unpaid leave with a proportional reduction in benefit accruals.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Or no, it needs to be just a general? Okay. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0.
Just as a reminder for individuals who may be watching, President White took public comment on all the business items up front.
Actually, I did.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Just reconfirming that.
Usually I forget. 9C, consideration of a recommendation to approve a resolution authorizing the president to modify the date that the district must relocate its facilities to the attached utility relocation agreement for the Oceana Drainage Improvement Project.
President White, members of the board and the public, your board has approved this agreement twice previously, the original time, and then when the county's schedule slipped, you approved it with new dates a second time. So this time we thought that we would bring a resolution forward simply to allow the board president to extend it in case the county's project schedule slips some more. In the board package, they indicate the dates that they plan on going out to bid, which is in January. It means that we have to have, I need to make sure that all of our bid documents are ready, you know, and done by the end of December as well. But the purpose of the resolution is that in case the county has further slippages in their schedule, that we don't need to come back to your board again. And be glad to answer any questions.
I don't have any questions.
I understand that it looks like this time it actually is going to happen.
I think it's a lot more likely. With the prior bid, there was some issues that they needed to address in their bidding documents. My understanding is that they put all the risks on the contractor if groundwater levels were high. And if you transfer the risk to the contractors, then you're going to see corresponding increases in bids. So I understand when they've gone back out to do some evaluations of groundwater levels and are going to maintain they're not going to transfer all that risk to the contractor. So that's one thing that they're doing in order to help try to mitigate the bids. And then the second thing that they've been doing is to seek a loan from USDA. The repayment of the loan is going to come from some of the gas tax revenues. And because the gas taxes were not repealed in the election in November, then they're going to continue to have the source of revenues to pay back for that loan. So I understand they still have some work to do to get it all done. But again, from a financial perspective, they've addressed two things as best as they can, the first being trying to modify bid documents to help bring bids back down, and then second is develop the additional funding necessary to implement.
Now, will we still have two options, the go with their bid and if...
Yes, similar to Air Park Drive, we're going to be incorporated into their bid documents and then also separately bid it. That worked out great on Airport Drive Bridge because Tony and Jason and Casey were able to self-perform at a cost significantly less than the bids. I'm not sure that on the drainage project we're going to have that same ability to self-perform because it's in Highway 1. Traffic control is going to be a completely different situation. So we are most likely going to be relying on whatever bids we get for this particular drainage. But we are going to pursue the same thing where we get a bid through the county's efforts, and then independently we get our own bid.
Okay. Thank you. Yes. This is a resolution. I have a motion.
I move that we approve the resolution authorizing the president to modify the date that the district must relocate its facilities and the utility relocation agreement for the Oceano Drainage Improvement Project.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Rapoco?
Aye.
Vice President Austin?
Yes.
Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President White?
Yes. All right. Moving on to 9D, consideration of 2019 district priorities and goals.
Madam President, President White, members of the board and public, the staff report really breaks down priorities in three different ways: existing district priorities, and then I gave an update on those in Attachment A. Other priorities that have developed regarding existing services, and those are the Five Cities Fire Authority JPA amendments, Lopez Water Supply Contract amendments in order to obtain storage rights in the reservoir, and then supporting Central Coast Blue through the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District and the development of funding options. And then the third are the component is the emerging issues that are not part of the district's historical services, including the place, recreation options at the community center, landscape maintenance and public rights of way, and then a community garden at Wilmar Avenue and 19th Street, which I don't think that the board has actually taken any formal action on. After putting together the agenda item, then the last couple days, there's an additional handout you have, which identifies those things that I especially think that I'm going to be more engaged in 2019. And then I lay them out, and then there's tabs, which are 1, 2, 3, and 4, which indicate first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter of 2019. The hardest thing in this type of work is the schedule. You know, identifying tasks and what needs to be done. You know, we can come up with lists of things that we need to get done pretty easily. Figuring out the fiscal implications are sometimes challenging, but scheduling is the one that is always the bear in order to figure out when are we really going to be able to get to something. And part of it is because we're not just doing one task at a time. And when we talk about priorities, then we also have our day-to-day responsibilities that something happens, like the billing associated with state water, and then all of a sudden we're responding to that. So I've done my best as I can to identify when I anticipate being able to address the various issues. There are two on this sheet that are hatched as opposed to a gray tone to them. And that is under capital projects for what I call pre-construction versus capital projects for implementation. There's a line that says potential SWB, which is the acronym for the State Water Board, technical assistance on low-impact development. So as part of our water resource reliability program, Canon's been developing conceptual project concepts for low-impact development. And last week I received a phone call from staff of the State Water Board. And that phone call really resulted because the State Water Board now, in working with disadvantaged communities, is trying to see where can they provide technical assistance in order to promote these low-impact development types of projects. Darla Inglis, who is working with one of the nonprofits and supporting the State Water Board, has done a fair amount of work for the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board and a fair amount of work on the Central Coast, and she's really one of the leaders in the state in coordinating with the State Water Board, as well as our consultant, Melanie Mills, from Canon. We're having some reoccurring discussions about what's going on a statewide basis. So they encouraged me to send a letter requesting technical assistance, I should say an email, an inquiry as to whether it might be possible or not. And the staff member from the State Water Board called me last week and wanted to know what the status of our work has been. So I indicated that Canon's report on our concepts in Oceano is going to be completed in the very near future. The draft is already done. And just kind of walked through our status and indicated that this is the type of a project, or these are types of projects, that there's no way we can envision funding with local money because of the need to address, you know, deferred infrastructure and other things that are going to be costly in and of themselves. And some of the feedback that I got was that the work that we've already done through the Prop 84 grant is ahead of a lot of the other communities that are going to be getting technical assistance. And so I could pick up a little bit of the excitement out of the individual's voice. So I'm hopeful, I can't yet be optimistic, but I'm hopeful that State Water Board's technical assistance program will help take the project concepts the next stage and start moving into some design work. Because once we can get into design work, then it'd be shovel ready for implementation grants. So I just hatched that in there for the full year because I have no idea what kind of schedule that might be. But certainly if we are awarded technical assistance, we would want to jump on it. As a reminder, we got technical assistance for the leak detection program, and California Rural Water Association came in and spent almost a week with the guys in the field, the operations crew, in order to do some leak detection. They also, technical assistance, did the income survey for us last year. And technical assistance is going to be helping us with our funding applications. So we've been able to take pretty good advantage of the technical assistance programs, and hopefully that will be true for the low-impact development as well. The other one that's hatched is the community garden at Wilmar and 19th Street, and I don't think that the board has, I can't remember having that in front of your board, but the work effort that the Eco District and what the county has been doing with Habitat for Humanity, during those discussions, some of this concept came up, and I think that the opportunity is good. How we implement it is still going to be dependent on volunteers, similar to landscape maintenance in the public right-of-way.
If I could just interject, yes. I learned at the community outreach meeting that contrary to what Habitat for Humanity had stated previously, they did not receive grant funding to actually implement anything in the Eco District. So their plans to put in a community garden there may be a little far off.
Yeah, and I wasn't necessarily relying on Habitat for Humanity for doing it.
I just wanted to put that out there because they made it sound like they had the money to do it, to do something soon, and they don't actually.
So. Yeah, and in their report, they also implied as though the district was, you know, had already approved it or something. I can't remember the exact language.
I corrected them numerous times on
that. This happens to be that stretch of land that's immediately adjacent to Mr. Vega's property, who, you know, was recently commenting because he wants to do. So, I mean, I like the idea of a community garden, especially so close to the community center and Oceano Elementary School. We would need to work with the property owners to make sure that you know, you don't want to just do something and then have the property owners get excited about it or whatever. So, so again, I hatched that one because I know that it's a potentially emerging issue, even though it hasn't taken, has had no formal board action yet, similar to the technical assistance on LID. I wanted to highlight those first, just again, because, you know, I'm not technically working under any board direction on those two items yet. But, you know, overall, in running through this list of these higher priority items that I see, and so in fiscal, the water and wastewater rate reviews, the rate increase on the water system was in April of 2015. The general standard is to do your rate reviews at least within five-year periods. Statutes, when you adopt a new rate increase, allow for certain pass-throughs. We can do inflationary adjustments on an annual basis without having to have an additional hearing. And we can also, if we have increases in costs like State Water or Lopez Water, we can pass those costs on to customers without having to have an additional hearing. So those two types of pass-throughs that are allowed under statute. The statute only allows the pass-throughs to occur for 5 years, and after 5 years, you can't have any more pass-throughs. And so what's happened in the, you know, the tendency is to make sure you do your rate reviews at least every 5 years. Part of it is to avoid, you know, the massive rate increases that people see from time to time, that if we keep the rates up with inflation and other types of basic costs that we have. People generally are more understanding of seeing those small increases every year because we see them in much of what we do. So in 2019, we need to do the basic rate review again. I say current status, you know, how is it that our water rates are doing compared to what we did in 2015? And one of the things that we know right up front is that after the end of the drought, the consumption in Oceano hasn't come back up. It's after a major rate increase and then drought conservation, when people, you know, we encourage them to reduce consumption, usually after, like within a three-year period, historical consumption is right back up. Sometimes when you have a retrofit for, you know, replacing low-flow toilets and those kind of things, then you don't ever see the full recovery of prior consumption because you've implemented new devices that help with conservation. But usually there's some sort of a rebound effect, and we're just not seeing it right now in Oceano. So our plan in the 2015 rate increase to implement post-drought rates based on increasing consumption, you know, reduce the rates as consumption goes up, that's one of the things that's just jumping out at me that's not happening. So we need to address that. And then we also need to move into more multi-year projections on our revenue needs, both on the water and wastewater site, and of course, infrastructure replacement is a component of that. So I anticipate in the second quarter of 2019, we'll start with the basic rate review evaluations, and concurrently with seeking funding applications for our water infrastructure replacement. And then third and fourth quarter is where I would anticipate we would actually be getting into actual, you know, rate hearings and a lot of the detailed public dialogue on what we're doing and why it's going to cost and, you know, what the benefits are. With respect to then, the next item is Five Cities Fire Authority, and I just blocked out the whole year for amending the JPA because I believe we're getting close on the funding formulas, and we're going to start talking about that publicly. But there's plenty of other provisions in the JPA that we're going to have to address. So I think that's going to be ongoing throughout the year. Like a lot of things, the work might kind of come in spurts, you know, but I still think we'll see activity for most of the year. I emailed the county this week and asking them for the updated schedule on the county study for their strategic plan. Haven't heard back yet. It was originally due to go to the Board of Supervisors in November. We haven't seen the draft yet. And I would imagine that, you know, the county has a looming strike, some other budgetary issues that they're dealing with. So those other issues may have been, you know, dominating board supervisor time and some other priorities. So I put first quarter that I would, you know, again, they originally anticipated November timing, and with the holiday season and everything, I can't imagine that's going to get to the Board of Supervisors this year. And it's a little bit of a guess, but it seems reasonable that we should see that in the first quarter of 2019. And then the special tax analysis is really going to be, you know, the second half of 2019. And we'll have a lot of public outreach to talk about, you know, what are the fiscal implications to Oceano for continuing in Five Cities Fire Authority. Moving to the Lopez, and at any time, feel free to ask questions. This is one of those presentations that it's good to interrupt if you want to. Lopez water supply contracts and obtaining storage rights. So legal counsel and I did send out a draft document, and I was scheduled to have a special TAC meeting for Zone 3 next week, but that may or may not happen now. But again, on Lopez water supply contract, similar to Five Cities Fire Authority, I just wouldn't be surprised if that dialogue, you know, continues through most of 2019. Central Coast Blue, I've been working on the sanitation district funding options, and those are going to result in meetings with the city managers in the very near future. I think that if any of the sanitation district funding options really gets any wind behind that sail, then it's going to predominantly be in the first quarter of next year. So it should happen. And then concurrent with that is, will a JPA be formed for the purpose of implementing Central Coast Blue? And I think that's going to be a topic throughout 2019. And a little bit of discussion that staff has had is how might a JPA work? And so we already have three members from Arroyo Grande, Grover, and Oceano who sit on the Sanitation District Board. A fourth member could be a city council person from Pismo Beach, since Pismo Beach would be part of the reclaimed water option. And then everybody's like, well, who would be the fifth? Because you have to have an odd number, right? Tiebreaker vote type of thing. And different ideas were kicked around. Maybe somebody from the county. I'm not sure that the county would be all that interested. Maybe somebody from agriculture, because phase two is envisioned to potentially make reclaimed water available for agriculture. And in the overall groundwater situation, you know, agriculture might be facing some of the challenges that municipalities have. And whether they're interested on it or a regulatory requirement might compel them to participate in reclaimed water. Again, that's sort of some of the discussions that if a JPA is formed, who might be that fifth member?
Mr. Ogren?
Yeah.
So the parts of Central Coast Blue that I'm familiar with are implemented at the Pismo Beach sewage plant. So how does Central Coast Blue relate to OCSD?
Okay, so currently at the Pismo's plant is where it's just the pilot plant. And so I can't remember the name of the firm, but it's from overseas. And so they're using that technology running Pismo's secondary treated wastewater through this plant and confirming that they can produce reclaimed water with the necessary water qualities. And I guess some people are already drinking the water. I haven't.
Yeah, I've tried it.
Yeah.
It tastes like water.
Okay. Amazing, huh? The plant itself, though, right now is envisioned to be built at the Sand District facilities. The idea is Pismo's flows would be phase one, and then the Sanitation District's flows would be phase two. Discussions amongst the engineers, though, is that they really don't see why some of the Sand District flows can't be incorporated into phase one. Both the Sand District and Pismo have what are called secondary treatment plants, but they don't treat the water the same. And so the Sand District's water quality is not as good as Pismo's. I think it's ammonia issues and some of that stuff. But they could take some of the Sand District water and blend it in with the Pismo water and still have a good enough quality to run it through the reclaimed water facility. So phase one might include some of the sand district flows, but the current vision is to have the reclaimed facility built at the sanitation district site.
What about sea level rise and managed retreat for that?
So I was just providing some staff comments on their initial study. And based on discussions with Jeremy Gent, one of his concerns is that even though the redundancy project has been fully permitted, including with the Coastal Commission, there's language in that permit that really needs to be addressed by Central Coast Blue. There might be a perception out there that the permitting of the redundancy project has essentially given a green light for the ability to put the reclaimed facility at the Sand District as well. And I'm not convinced that there's a green light there. But when the Central Coast Blue goes through its coastal development permit, what I envision is they'll have to do the sea level rise evaluation that was done for the redundancy project and then potentially have to update it. Because we all know that if one project gets an EIR passed or a permit passed, well, that doesn't give a guarantee for the next project. The fact that the redundancy project did get approved, though, is somewhat of good news. Part of the evaluation is going to be the life cycle of the different facilities. And a reclaimed water facility, and the way that they call them the racks and the actual components of the reclaimed water, those are actually a little bit more portable than, like Santa Barbara County, when they had their desal plant in the prior drought, they just sold off the parts. And then in this drought, they had to buy new parts and rebuild it or whatever. But these advanced treatment facilities could potentially be moved. And so if unanticipated rises in sea level happen, that might be a mitigation that they would have to move it at some point in time. It's really hard for me to predict how the permitting process is going to work its way through. We know that for a coastal development permit, Coastal has a standard which says that will often come up with, look, you know, this does not meet coastal requirements, and I'm not implying that the reclaim project won't, right? Unless there's no feasible alternative, and they might end up getting into, you know, the feasible alternative analysis for the reclaim water project as well. I can say that the approach to the EIR is project specific for phase one and programmatic for phase two. And even though there's the indication that, you know, the proponents want to go from phase one to phase two pretty quickly, I'm probably not as sold yet that phase two is necessary in the foreseeable future. There's definitely evaluations that show that phase one could have a really positive benefit. And if we can... if that positive benefit is sufficient for water resource reliability in the near term, I like the programmatic approach on phase two. It's not project specific, and so supplemental EIR work would have to be done for phase two. There's a lot of different variables, obviously, that are going on, and but you know, sea level rise is predominantly going to be focused in at coastal on the coastal development permit.
Thank you.
Going back to then, the second part of your question is the relationship to Oceana. The dialogue that we've had in prior board action in support of Central Coast Blue have supported Central Coast Blue, but I think everybody understands that don't expect Oceana CSD to buy into a water supply project when we currently have Lopez, State Water, and Groundwater. We are increasing water in storage during the drought, and the need for Oceano to, the ability for Oceano to justify the need for a new water supply project would be very questionable. If it's implemented through the sanitation district with funding options through the sanitation district, then The sanitation district has different statutory authority, or it has its own unique statutory authority underneath the health and safety code, which includes full reclamation and injection of water back into the groundwater basin. And so it is a possibility that the sanitation district could develop the findings necessary for health and safety and the sustainability of a groundwater basin to implement the project independently of Arroyo Grande, Oceano, and Grover Beach, and essentially fund the costs for the three communities through the sanitation district. If that is, and that's attractive to the project's feasibility because it helps spread the cost over a larger population. There is reason to believe that it can be justified similar to the findings associated with recycling of solid waste, where the costs associated with recycling of solid waste are incorporated into, you know, our garbage bills. And so the cost of recycling reclaimed water can also be, believed can be justified through findings of health and safety findings and the need for a sustainable groundwater basin. And there's a little bit where the sanitation district could step back and say, hey, this all needs to be done, and we don't have the confidence that those agencies can get it done on their own, and we as the sanitation district are going to step forward and do that. Well, it starts to get into the situation of, well, how much of it is a wastewater project versus how much of it's a water supply project? So if the sanitation district were to, you know, if the parties as a whole would want the sanitation district to go down that path, and if the sanitation district either independently felt like they needed to or wanted to, then that reclamation of wastewater, including the benefits of not sending it out to the ocean, making sure it gets back into the groundwater basin, becomes a responsibility issue that those of us who soil the water are responsible for cleaning it up and getting it back into the groundwater basin. And so the statutory provisions that authorize the sanitation district to take such actions are important, as well as the public policy and the findings that would be there. Well, at that point then, well, who's ultimately the beneficiaries? And it's the water pumpers. And so the JPA then could be the vehicle then that says, okay, if the sanitation district and the city of Pismo Beach implement these projects, then what are the beneficiaries like Oceano, Grover, Arroyo Grande, and then back to Pismo? What are we going to do to make sure that we manage the groundwater basin properly? Because the last thing we would want to do is to have that water put back in the groundwater basin, and then everything gets overdeveloped, and then the groundwater basin gets back into an unsustainable type of a situation. So, you know, again, in a nutshell, is that the sanitation district does provide the opportunity to increase project feasibility by spreading costs over a larger population. And then the JPA would be, how do we make sure that we're efficiently managing the groundwater basin with reclaimed water? That can include a lot of different things, including how might the parties agree to pumping reductions as we see declines in the groundwater basin, because none of us are obligated to each other to reduce pumpings at the current time. So there's a number of other nested issues in there as well, which is why if we get into discussions on JPA for reclaimed water, I would anticipate it would last throughout 2019. The driver really is the feasibility of the project, and is that going to help with the funding? And I think that's going to be decided or in front of everybody most likely in the first quarter of next year, just because of the timing of the project. And I'm hearing people talk about how are we going to fund this and that and the other thing. And
thank you.
Okay. So that's Central Coast Blue. Capital Projects Implementation Phase, the four projects, the emergency generator, which, again, is going to be the purpose of the Five Cities Fire Authority special meeting on Monday, the utility relocations to the county drainage project, and then the two relatively smaller waterline projects to replace some 2-inch galvanized pipes. Capital Projects pre-construction is the Water Resource Reliability Program is getting close to wrapping up, and we're going to have to start addressing how are we going to implement that program. But I have been corresponding with the county about modifying our Prop 84 grant tasks a little bit. And in a nutshell, it seems like it might work. There's some leak detection analysis associated with historical records, which is included in the scope of work for the grant right now. And some of the historical records just simply aren't in very good shape. Because California Rural Water came in and did the leak detection analysis, the pleading to the county and ultimately to the Department of Water Resources is to say, look, we think we've really done as much leak detection work as we need to. We know where our problems are. The California Rural Water Association evaluation said that in those questionable areas, we don't really have leaks. So we know what the projects are we need to implement. Let's delete some of those items from the scope of work so we can take the budget savings and move it into design work. And for example, the $20,000 that we did as a budget adjustment for the current design efforts might then potentially be paid out of the grant revenues. And so the bottom line there is we want to make more cost-effective use of those grant monies. That's a little bit of a side note, but again, figuring out what the funding is going to be for the infrastructure replacement program in water is going to be a big component of the first half. Hopefully, again, sometimes these things are hard to estimate on schedule, but that's where I'm anticipating right now. Also under pre-construction, then, the sewer capital improvement program. Your board previously authorized going out to an RFP on that. I haven't been able to develop the RFP yet, but I would anticipate that we would have the engineering during the second and third quarter. That's assuming I have the RFP out, but again, I don't see a problem with getting the RFP out so that the engineers will be engaged in the second and third quarter. Emerging issues, the place, I think that, of course, they would like it to go a lot faster, but we still have a lot of boxes out at that old firehouse, and I know Kerry was out there today again, and the Shred-It came by and he took care of some more. So we're plugging away at cleaning it up, but it's still going to take us a while.
Have we resolved the issues with the title?
We did get a title report, and we don't see any questions there. I can circulate that, but yeah, it doesn't. I don't think there's anything that's questionable about our ownership of that building. What was it? It's still, the title report still references the old Oceano Fire Protection District.
I think.
So it's not in Oceano Community Services District's name. But when the Oceano Fire Protection District got consolidated through the vote in 1980 with the old Sanitary District, which was our old collection system entity, County Service Area 13 was the water entity, and they all got consolidated in 1980 through a vote of the people, then, you know, that just means that we own the assets of the old Fire Protection District. So I think we were talking about doing something to record it against title or something.
It was spelled out like that.
It
became property of OCSD like it's already.
Yeah.
Because they took.
Yeah, so we clearly own the facility. We want to probably put something on title to recognize the government reorganization that led to the creation of this district. And I've contacted David Church about if he has any examples of other agencies doing that. And usually LAFCO doesn't get involved in that detail. So we do need to, that's a task that we need to work on. Recreation at the community center, we know we want to do an RFP. I'm going to really be reliant on Nicole to help coordinate with the Lucy and Mar Unified School District. But anticipate that, you know, again, in December, I really have to get these construction contracts ready to bid and see that January in the first quarter is when I can turn attention to the community center. Landscape maintenance in the public right-of-way we've discussed. And so those are that left side of the sheet is really the sort of the service-oriented priorities that I've laid out.
Would this be a good place to add a few suggestions?
Yes.
In that area? I think I've talked before about how it would be good to increase the participation of the Spanish-speaking members of our community, since Oceano is about half Hispanic. And I think there may be some technology that could help with that at the meetings and community outreach events and things like that. So I would like if we could explore that for 2019. And we've also talked before about getting some equipment for people who are hard of hearing who attend the meetings. Like Lucia was here previously and was having a lot of difficulty understanding if she couldn't see the speaker. So as a way of offsetting the costs of any of that, I would like to suggest that we explore some modern options for doing the video and live stream of these meetings. Right, AGP is doing a great job, but if I think you had mentioned before that we could get a grant or something from the county to get our own video recording equipment, and then if we could live stream ourselves, my final suggestion would be if we could have some sort of social media presence to also further engage the community, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And we could live stream on Facebook even, which is no cost. So I think those are things I'd like to put out there for the board to consider as ways of making our meetings more accessible to the community and drawing in more of the community to be engaged with us.
Quick feedback. So on the grant, I did inquire both with the county and charter about the ability to access what's called the PEG funds, Public Education and Government Funds. And those are still available. Charter has submitted a dispute on a statewide basis or a challenge that says that the PEG funds do not comply with, I want to say Proposition 20, which is a fee, something that requires voter approval for certain types of fees. My understanding is the Attorney General disagrees, and of course all the local agencies disagree. As a result, though, the county in awarding any grant money would require us to sign basically a condition that says that if they ever have to give the money back, because let's say Charter prevails on something, and if they ever had to give the money back, then we'd have to give the money back. So there is a risk that your board would have to evaluate in that type of situation. Part of me thinks that that risk would probably be worth it anyhow. And we can continue to follow up on that. And that would help with the live streaming and the meeting equipment for translation, they said probably would not be eligible because that's just for participants and not for live streaming or public access via the TV. And we have done some research on that, but that would most likely, that money would come out of the district's budget. I'm not sure how we would translate. We'd have to do some more research on it. If we have a live stream, ideally, that live stream would also be translated.
Ideally.
Yeah, but I'm not sure.
As a lower or perhaps no-cost option, it might be possible to get volunteers from the community to come in and, you know, sit in the back of the room and translate for Spanish speakers.
Yeah, and also it makes me wonder whether or not, and maybe this isn't appealing to people, I don't know, but the subscript, you know, We have more and more programs that
subtitles.
That will do automatic translations. Social media itself is one of those things where it can quickly create a lot of demands for staff time, so we have to be careful there. Because if people are posting things and expecting responses, then all of a sudden that's going to, you know, take up a bunch of staff time, and we need to be cognizant of that. Just addressing how we might do what you're recommending itself is going to take up a fair amount of staff time. So it's certainly one of those things that I would immediately start thinking about Nicole, you know, because she's did the community event and she's already done some research on it.
Yeah, I could also suggest that maybe we could form an ad hoc committee to work on that. A couple of the directors and Nicole and brainstorm how to.
You know, and in some of these priorities, that's really what it's going to take. You know, maybe it's identifying that person out in the community who knows this stuff and can help us out. Board members doing research.
To play devil's advocate, it wasn't too many months ago that we were considering dropping the APG from costs and things. It's been discussed several times. I'm just saying, you know, this is adding stuff that isn't mandated at a time when we're barely reaching our budget around the stuff that is.
Well, I'm just suggesting we drop AGP in favor of some other way of recording and transmitting the meetings.
Well, then
that would be
able
less
to,
expensive.
I wouldn't be able to see them.
Why wouldn't you be able to?
Because I don't have any of this electronic stuff.
Can you?
I just use it as an. I'm just.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Just,
let's, so let's clarify a little bit.
Can you speak in the microphone? I couldn't hear anything you said, Director White.
Oh, I mean
President White.
Yeah. I was just saying that if we live streamed it, I don't know that any of that would. I don't have Wi-Fi. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't have that.
No.
So I'm just
live
saying.
Live stream would be like on Facebook. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Let's,
well, I mean, this
I'm just
live
saying,
right now, I think.
Let me
it?
Clarify
no?
real quick.
It's just recorded.
We would have the same access to however we get on Charter right now. We would still have the ability to have our meetings aired on Charter cable TV. It's through the Public Education Government grant funding that the equipment could be provided to transition from service of AGP to having cameras set up that just, you know, we utilize the cameras and the meetings are, you know, you just don't pay AGP. And some agencies do that. That itself is going to require some, you know, time on staff. But the idea, you know, Director Replogle is correct, that there are potential cost savings there. And some governmental agencies already do that. There's trade-offs because when AGP is here, you know, their ability to cover the discussions and switch cameras and provide for better feeds is better than we would be able to do. So there are trade-offs, but there is potential cost savings.
Yeah.
The question in my mind is how to even get started. And so Director Replogle's thought was an ad hoc committee where members of the board could, you know, start helping do some of the research on that. And I think if that's the direction that the board wants to go with, then that probably is the best way to start. Perhaps then, you know, at our next meeting is where we're going to develop the 2019 committee assignments. And, you know, the introduction of that thought today I think is a good one. And then I think the follow-up would be at your next meeting when you're making committee assignments, and is it the board's pleasure at that time to create an ad hoc committee to help support those efforts?
I would certainly support that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So when we prepare that item, we'll, you know, include that for discussions at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No. Thank you.
While we got a break, anybody else? And while we got a break, do we need a break in the meeting for 10 minutes?
Sure.
Can we take a 10-minute break?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, there is a lot of people. There are a lot of people I know because with hearing impairments, I know various people in my life that have hearing impairments. So it's more common than you think.
All of my neighbors.
Yeah. So.
We did it. AGP. Yeah. Oh, so we need to take a break here.
I don't know what they do. What do they do for hearing impairment?
They
we have employees and supervisors.
So something that hook into our microphones that
I don't know how. It okay. Works. I know there's like special headphones. Because I see them.
Resuming meeting at 8:05.
So as we were...
Go on to the second side of the
page. Well, as we were reconvening, we had a little bit of discussion here on the types of hearing devices that will help with some of the individuals who are attending the meetings. And we did inquire both with the county and with AGP, and I think we may still be waiting for some follow-up with them. So that inquiry is still open. Moving to the from issues that are service oriented into more of the rules and regulations and policies, I've broke it down between rules and regulations and policies. And real quick, I want to cover the policies first. At the bottom, your board considered the drafts of Series 1000, 4000, and 5000, General Board of Directors and Board Meetings. And so, you know, really pretty quickly here in January, I'll come back and seek final approval of those. And then in terms of the additional series, it's the personnel or human resources ones, the 2000 that Carrie's going to start working on. And there's a lot to that, and so I'm just scheduling that's sort of the first half of the year. And then the other policies on operations, facilities, development, and environmental, you know, I'll be looking for her help on that too, but really more toward the fourth quarter because the third quarter is all about closing year end and doing audit work and those kind of things. Again, scheduling is, you know, a little bit tough to predict on some of that stuff, but that's where I came up there. Within those policies, I also think that there's some social media policies that CSDA has drafted. And so we can look to those as well with regard to some of the suggestions from Director Replogle most recently. Moving up into the rules and regulations, those tend to be the ones that are a little bit tougher because it's our relationships. At the previous board meeting where I talked about rules and regulations versus policies, policies are typically more of our internal business practices, and the rules and regulations are external business practices. So the very first one that we need to focus on is the multi-residential development, and that includes sea breeze and other types of developments that, you know, again, are multi-residential. They're not all the same, but how is it that we need to address the different natures or the similarities in our rules and regulations? And that really is the highest priority that we have there. Laterals and out-of-district service ones are, I think, more of next fiscal year. Out-of-district service, for example, is we serve water and provide wastewater service to numerous homes that are in Rio Grande. And to the extent that we're looking at line repairs or line replacements that serve properties outside of the district, one of the questions that I have is, well, whatever the cost of those lines are going to be paid for by out-of-district customers and not part of our overall water rates. We also know that Arroyo Grande near 7-Eleven did a bunch of line extensions, and they might be in a position to take over service to a number of their customers. So we'll have to be looking at that.
We service that development next to 7-Eleven, right?
You know, I don't know if Tony is... I'm not entirely clear, right at 7-Eleven. There's some that Arroyo Grande serves, and
right.
There's other ones that we serve. And Arroyo Grande serves customers that look like they should be in Oceano, but they're still in Arroyo Grande. And then
right.
We serve people who are in Arroyo Grande. So there's some unique situations there that I really want to...
The other out-of-district is... There's a place in it. Where in Arroyo Grande do we service?
Well, there's a couple that are on the other side of Arroyo Grande, where they buy our water, but they wheel it through, like Canyon Crest. It was a development that was supposed to be based on well water, and after the subdivision was developed, it was determined that the well water was insufficient. And so they were scrambling, and basically were able to acquire water from Oceano and then use Arroyo Grande's conveyance system. So I want to get those all laid out. That one is, that type of thing is one that when we look at scheduling and what do we ultimately get to, it's probably one that's going to be a lower priority, and if we don't get to it, it would be deferred. The next item, non-payment of bills, though, we have to tackle in 2019. Legislation was passed during the current year that goes into effect February to April of 2020. Which will not allow us to shut off water if people don't pay their bills. And, of course, that's always been the number one way to make sure people pay bills and water, is that you have the ability to shut them off.
Can they still be throttled? Like, not very much water?
I like how you think.
I mean, because then nobody would pay their bills.
Well, you know what? That's a really good question. So California Rural Water, again, has come through, and they're planning on doing some local workshops and brainstorming on how to work with this. One of the things that we know is that if somebody doesn't pay, all of our customers are property owners. We don't directly have tenants as customers. We will take payment from the tenants, and we will bill the tenants for $2, $2.40. Because a lot of times the landlords will require the tenants to pay for the utilities. But our ultimate recourse is still against the landlords, the property owners. And there are provisions that allow us to put liens on property for non-payment of bills. And so we might also just have to look at how fast can we get through that lien process. Because if we can't turn off the water and yet the owner is getting a lien put on their bill, it changes the dynamic. The owner is going to now turn and make sure that the tenant's paying the bill.
If you can lean, then that's still okay.
Do you have average number of people that don't pay? Or
we do have the statistics on how many people go late and everything else. So I'm not going to say it's a significant number in Oceano, but it's not an insignificant number. We always have a fair amount. In fact, we could look at our late fee revenues and just divide it by $5, right? And that would tell us how many accounts have gone late every... And then we could look at door hanger fees and divide that by 25 and see how many people wait till their door hangers. So there's late payers, and then there's super late payers.
I actually paid late once because the bills weren't electronic, and I misplaced the paper bill.
Yeah.
So I paid. I hope we get to electronic bills in 2019.
I don't trust my bills to a computer.
Okay, so non-payment of bills we're going to have to tackle. Enforcement and code compliance. And so I sort of have two different categories there, solid waste, health and safety, I think we've talked before in our ordinance, we do have the prohibition against accumulation of waste on property, but we can't go onto somebody's property without a bench warrant. We can implement enforcement in the public rights of way, but in some situations, which we do have some bad situations like on Pier Avenue, it's really going to require more coordination with the county, because the county has the broader health and safety, and they've got condemnation rights.
This is an area where I think it would be good that we maybe look into. We're doing the committee, like an ad hoc committee or something, on being more involved with county code enforcement, having them become more involved with following up and taking care of things in Oceano that haven't.
Yeah, and as opposed to an ad hoc committee, though, because those are for isolated situations, so an ad hoc committee, for example, on how might we develop a social media policy, right? But on solid waste, the health and safety issues and code enforcement, the question is, not for tonight, but for the next meeting, the possibility of an actual standing committee. The difference between ad hoc committees, or one of the differences between an ad hoc committee and a standing committee, is a standing committee has to post agendas and has to do everything to comply with the Brown Act. But to the extent that you're going to have reoccurring and regular meetings developed around the same subject matter, we really can't have ad hoc committees. We need
right.
to have standing committees.
Well, I would like to look into that. And then
yeah.
maybe like we could even get a code enforcement officer to come once a month.
I think that's what would be ideal. That's right, because if we have a standing committee meeting on code enforcement issues and get the county to participate in them, to me that's the way to get the coordination happening, because
I think we need that.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Do abandoned cars fit in there somewhere? Or?
They can, yeah, because abandoned cars are... You know, how's that not a solid waste,
yeah.
you know, issue?
Mm-hmm.
Abandoned campers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, staff can try to coordinate with staff at the county all we want and get frustrated with them and them get frustrated with us.
Channel,
but through a standing committee and formalization of it, I'd have more hope that
right.
issues are going to be addressed.
I think our citizenry would support that too. I think they would be proud of us to go after all that, because we get
yeah.
complaints. Lots of our complaints are based on that.
You know, and there's also an interesting feature of the Brown Act that I haven't had a chance to confirm with legal counsel yet. But there is an indication that when you have a standing committee and you're complying with the Brown Act and you're providing public comment on that at that standing committee, and there's probably what I read is there's some conditions. It's the standing committee has to be wholly composed of board members. You can't have other people come in and sit on the standing committee. But the deliberations and the determinations of the standing committee, while they would have to be ratified by the board as a whole, would not need to have public hearings or even public comment. They would just go into a special portion of the agenda that is just gets approved. And I just recently read that because of a court determination down in Southern California, I think Long Beach. And so again, I haven't had a chance to review it with legal counsel. But that also explains to me why, like LA County, they have a public works commission. And that's where all the dialogue is. And when it actually gets to the LA County Board of Supervisors, there's no public comment on this stuff. Why do I mention it? It's not because I'm opposed to public comment. I'm supportive of efficiencies in government. And if we're dealing with some challenging enforcement issues at a standing committee and all of it's been aired there, to be repetitive on controversial situations and to repeat all that public comment, kind of creates its own little challenges or whatever. So there's some nuances in the Brown Act that we want to address as well. But I like the idea in enforcement situations to keep them concentrated, you know, at a committee level if possible. We'd previously talked about special meetings of your board, but that was really on isolated cases, and this bigger need to coordinate with the county, I think we might have more hope with the standing committee. And some basic thoughts there. Infrastructure, non-compliant situations, and retrofit on sale ordinances. Those I contrast with enforcement for code compliance. There is non-compliant situations like on standards. Again, let's take
parking.
I'm thinking about water systems, people who don't have backflow preventers, other types of situations. You know, the Standing Committee on Code Enforcement could also address, you know, our infrastructure issues and kind of get those combined, not just solid waste or health and safety.
Yeah.
And the other question is retrofit on sale ordinance. So if we know of non-standard situations where, let's say there's a sewer lateral, but it doesn't have a clean out, or it doesn't have the backflow preventer in it, retrofit on sale ordinance says that, look, when you do the property sale, those things need to be fixed. People don't like that when property's in escrow necessarily, but it's easier to come up with the money to do the fixes when all that money is passing hands and there's a sale. It's a lot harder often for property owners or people to come up with the money to fix non-compliant situations, you know, just out of their pocketbook or out of their monthly budget. And so, you know, on the one hand, it sounds somewhat of a assertive technique to require retrofit on sale. But on the other hand, it's often an easier way or a more convenient way to get compliance than, you know, to call somebody out on a Thursday and say you need to fix your situation.
How many do we have that need retrofit in Oceano? Are there houses built before a certain year? How do we know what needs to be retrofitted?
Well, Tony, I think we did do the survey of all the cleanouts, right? So we have been able to go through and identify what properties have cleanouts on the sewer laterals and which ones don't. When it comes to non-standard situations or funky situations, when it comes to water laterals, sometimes we don't find that out until somebody wants to get a building permit. And then we look at it and we're like, well, you know, you have to bring it up to standards. And they're like, but it's still been that way forever. And we're like, well, yeah, but it still needs to be fixed. And as a condition of your you know, will serve letter, you're going to have to, you know, fix it. So, again, we've been able to serve it.
But there's no ordinance. So if there was an ordinance, then it would be easier on
Yeah. So our ordinance right now gives us the ability to enforce for if something's not in compliance with our rules and regulations and standards. The challenge is really going to, you know, knocking on those 800 doors in Oceano and saying you have to start putting in cleanouts now.
Yeah. So you just don't do it until it's sold.
The historical practice is when somebody comes in and wants a will serve letter and is requesting permission from us for something, then we say, well, yeah, of course we're going to give you a will serve letter, but you're obligated to fix whatever isn't standard right now. And sometimes that's easements. You know?
We have people with smaller water meters, too?
Yeah, that's not necessarily non-standard, though.
Oh.
Because the requirement to upgrade is also triggered based on fire standards when they go to do their new development.
Yeah.
So, in some ways, there's different kind of standards, right? There's standards of what are the standards for new development. And so if you've got a 5/8 inch meter and you're not doing new development, you're still compliant. It's just when you go to develop, you have to upgrade to the new standard.
Yeah.
And then there's other situations where the existing infrastructure just simply is not compliant at all. The best way to characterize is some things are grandfathered, some things aren't grandfathered. And then the last item there is then fees, development fees and fees for service calls. And one thing that we haven't touched is how we assess fees on new development. We've been just working with the existing ordinances that have been around for a while. We don't have, you know, a lot of development in Oceano. We don't have the big subdivisions coming through. We do have an occasional subdivision. You know, our fees overall for new development are running in the $10,000 to $15,000 range. And that's really pretty reasonable compared to a lot of other agencies. So we don't hear any real negative feedback for the most part. Once in a while, an individual property owner doesn't like their $8,000 fee for adding a new unit. But again, I don't see a lot of pushback just simply because our fees on new development are, you know, generally well below comparable other agencies. But they do need to be looked at. So a number of those items that you see is sort of third and fourth quarter work items, and third and fourth quarter work items can sometimes slip into the subsequent calendar year, again, depending on everything that else is that's going on. Let's see. So there was a couple other, I think, comments. We did address the code enforcement item that I believe you wanted to address, Vice President Austin. I wasn't sure if there was another item.
I asked about, we haven't talked about the new service building, building. I know we talked about, which I thought would mean for the community garden, that would be happening when we were to rebuild the building, but are we going to still do that?
Okay, so the report back to the board on the work effort that RRM Design did on the 19th Street yard indicated that the county was going to have some really significant conditions on rebuilding at that site, including curb gutter and sidewalk all along 19th Street, including pushing back the property a little bit, and the costs were really, really pretty exorbitant. So our next step is to evaluate using existing district property between the sheriff's building and the old fire station to potentially do, a yard for operations. We would still maintain the existing yard, you know, for maintenance of, like, the heavy equipment or whatever makes sense. I mean, it's kind of, ideally you'd want everything in the same yard. On the other hand, it's not like, you know, this spot to the other spot is that far away, right? We're not living in even Paso Robles where, you know, you could be talking several miles between the different yards.
That'd be pretty close to the downtown area, though, that we're hoping to revitalize at some point.
Right. So the concept is for offices and facilities for the yard so that the design could be repurposed in the future, you know, at some point.
So there would be offices?
Yeah. So at the yard, the operating crew, they have their offices out there in addition to having a shop and some other stuff. So along Highway 1 here, I would not envision the traditional operational yard with, you know, it would be have to be something that could be readily converted into another use in the future.
Thanks for clarifying.
That itself requires a little bit of creativity, but again, there's really a significant potential cost savings by doing that. I don't know if the operating crews are keen on the idea of having to be so close to the office because Kerry's got a reputation of really keeping them in line, and the closer they are, the more they're going to be kept in line. But, you know, there's trade-offs there, too. So the point there is we'll need to, in terms of on fiscal and infrastructure replacement, we're going to have to address that there. And I really need to then follow back up with RRM to do some site planning on this site.
What kind of priority does that have? Because I would think that could slide while other things got done.
Yeah, but if we want to be able to evaluate the cost of having to do that and make sure that they're incorporated into our right structure for infrastructure replacement.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
The evaluation that they did at the yard was, it was a purchase order for $25,000. I know they didn't spend the whole amount. I think they were probably came in at about $20,000. And that was a lot more complicated. So I can talk to them about what they think they might be able to do here and come back to the board with that. Okay. And then, President White, we were talking a little bit about the letter to the editor with regarding Zone 1 and 1A.
Yeah. There was a letter to the editor by Joe Shocker. And that was a very nice letter. I'm not objecting to the letter, but he referred to an Oceanic Community Service District meeting, but it was all about Zone 11A, and it made me realize that our constituency doesn't really understand the Oceanic Community Service District's responsibilities and the county responsibilities. And I just wish there was some way we could more clarify what we're doing and what we can't do or what we don't have any involvement in. And, yeah, I went to the Zone 1A meeting. It was just I just went as an advisor. I'm not even assigned as a member or anything. And I gave the report just for information. But he linked the two of us in his letter. So Oceanic Community Service District has no capacity to help, for instance, at Meadow Creek or the flooding at the Roy Grandy Creek or these issues that he brought up. But it reflects on us. And I think it's a problem that we are going to need to continually say, hey, this is what we're doing. This is our responsibilities. And make sure that our constituent understands we're working very hard on the water lines and the sewer lines and all the stuff that we're involved in, but we can't take responsibility for what the county's doing or not doing. How's that? So I just think we need to keep focused on letting everybody know our tasks. Anyway.
I have some thoughts, but I'm not sure if other board members have thoughts first.
Well.
Maybe we could start off every meeting by stating what we are responsible for, our list of
Oceanic community
powers or.
The Oceanic Community Service District responsible for. Yeah.
I agree with you. A lot of people don't understand. They think we're like a city council and we have like broad responsibility for the whole community.
Well, and I think more than that, they think we're failing in our responsibilities.
Yeah.
Well, the streets are flooding.
That we don't have.
The streets are flooding. It's all your fault. Well, yeah. Yeah, but just saying it's the county doesn't always help. But I just use that as an example. Yeah.
So, you know, one of my thoughts is to take this, you know, general priority discussion that we have and then creating, like, the board message for 2019.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of, you know, I guess that's my basic thought.
We used to do, long time ago, like, once a year, the president, the first of the year, would write a viewpoint and put just like what you said.
Yeah,
and
so
put it in the newspaper or out on the website, the president's message for the year.
And so maybe, we don't know who the president is going to be next year, but my thought was, you know, President
White. You do an end of the year report.
Yeah, talk about what we've been able to do this year and what the priorities are going to be for next year.
There you go.
And that you and I could draft something up for consideration by the board as a whole at the next meeting.
Yeah.
Those types of...
Can you put it in the water bill? Like, you know...
Yes.
A letter, I think.
Bilingual.
This is what you're paying.
Yes, Ms. Casillo?
It would have to be for not this one, but the next one.
Yeah.
Well, we could also we can
tomorrow.
We can do.
When are these bills going out?
Yeah. Well, no, I just meant when, you know, at the right time when it's done.
Well, it could be put
on the website,
And just distributed to the media.
Yeah.
And then also put in our
Yeah, because the next bills will be going out sort of toward the end of January then. And that's still a good time for
it. That's still a good time to say what the year before and what's coming up at the end of January.
The other thing to clarify, it's almost like you have to state what we can't do.
Carefully.
Yeah, and sometimes that can be a statement of support for the things that the county is pursuing.
Right.
And then we're saying in a positive light that...
Right, in a positive way.
You know, yay county and making the point, not us.
You know, address the 13th Street, all the little things that people talk about.
Yeah. The Zone 1-1A and the 13th Street are big things for our community. I mean, to my thinking, if they ever can resolve the Meadow Creek, the island flooding, the creek... provide more safety for that, and then the 13th Street, the flooding here. I mean, those are big things that we need to support. We just don't have any say in how it's done.
Maybe we say it that way. We support the county's effort to do X, X, and X.
Exactly.
Okay, so my then final thought on this is if President White and I draft something up, when we post it on the agenda, which would be, a week from Friday, it always happens pretty fast, that at that time, you know, the other four board members are going to see it. And what would be, I think, effective is to get back to me directly on any suggestions that you might have for edits and everything so that I can try to work, you know, a final version best as I can for distribution at the board meeting because we'll kill ourselves if we try to wordsmith it too much at the board meeting. And so, you know,
and don't contact me.
Right.
Talk to
you know.
That becomes a kind of a Wheeling Brown Act violation. Just reminding everybody that you don't get to... Talk to each other.
Well, and that's the key, is give me the feedback. I won't redistribute any edits, right? Because I can't engage in, you know, dialogue with four or five members of the board and then come here and say, oh, this is what you guys wanted, and it's done, right? So President White and I will create a draft, and then when you see it on the agenda, just get me your feedback, and we should be pretty close. And if we don't get it all done on... the next meeting, that's okay too.
Sounds like a good solution to keep communications open as best we can with our community.
Yep.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, questions, comments, expectations, demands?
Any more work that needs to be done? Moving on to item 10, hearing items. There's none. Received written communication. I see none. Late received written communication.
Mm-mm.
And I know for our future agenda, our next meeting, we would be drafting
a
letter.
And
we
we're
would
gonna
be electing a board.
I think we're going to do the Brown Act and your basic
Brown
ethics.
Act training.
Yeah. Ethics training, committee appointments.
elections.
We're either going to swear the board members back in or we'll have it done before that. You know what, typically the first meeting of December is a big swearing in because it's all ceremonial. But you've all been appointed in here for a few meetings, so if you want to do the ceremonial thing again, or we just do it in the office and just...
Let's have the ceremony.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do the ceremony. I know, it's exciting.
Yeah.
The only other item that I want to talk about for next is whether the board would be open to the consideration of a potential office closure Christmas week. We know that a number of staff members are going to be gone. And there might be an opportunity. We all, as the on-call operators, still have to be on-call. So if there is sort of this overwhelming desire by... office closures, of course. It's done through vacation, right? But if everybody wants to take the week off of Christmas for vacation, we're going to count staff and see who might want to and... Saves the district a little bit of money on electricity and stuff. It doesn't really save much money.
Christmas is on a Tuesday.
The 24th through the 28th, Friday, and then back
no.
home.
Yeah, so...
All week?
Well, so, potentially. I mean, there's a lot of places that shut down, a lot of countries that shut down. So I know that at least a few of us are going to be taking vacation that week. I don't know if everybody is or not. I'm just kind of throwing it out there that we might put an agenda item on, see if your board's willing to consider that.
So if you have a week off, you feel like you can catch up?
I know. Carrie's probably going to say, you all take off, I'll keep the office closed.
I don't know if I believe that. Yeah.
Well, they'd be off on the 24th and 25th anyway.
So it's a half a day on the 24th. Yeah, we just got to take it up next meeting.
Sorry.
So that's a potential future agenda item for next meeting, depending on if the inquiries with staff. And then, of course, we will be not having the meeting on the 26th.
Well,
the ad hoc committee of staff. No.
Anything else to come before this board?
I have a future agenda item I'd like to add. As Lucia mentioned, I think it would be good if we draw up a list of the ways that state parks impacts the OCSD. I heard Tony talking about one of them just today, which was a clog due to high traffic weekend at State Park, and I've heard him come before the board and say similar things in the past, so that's at least one way that State Parks is impacting us, and it would be good to identify those things and perhaps at some point draft a letter and submit it when they're receiving comments on their public works plan.
And I haven't seen the letter that County Council provided to State Parks.
I can provide that to
you. Okay. Yeah, that would be great.
Well, and we already sent one letter to them in regard to requests for an economic study that I think fell on deaf ears, didn't it?
Yeah, and that was a comment letter on the notice of preparation for the EIR.
Yeah.
So there's going to be plenty of public comments after their actual draft EIR is on the streets.
Yeah.
And I think what Director Oplobel is sort of intimating here is let's make sure we're prepared in advance for when that public comment period comes up.
Yes.
Especially if there's financial mitigation.
Yes, and or this issue of them having I can't remember what the name of them are, but there are facilities that when Tony had mentioned in our lift stations, basically you have a grinder pump, right? So there's a lot of things that go through our wastewater system that get ground up, and then it's easier to, you know, get them to go to where they need to go. But when we, if someone's at state parks and they're pushing towels and stuff into the cleanouts where they would normally just, you know, discharge their waste out of an RV and stuff, those things are hard. And my experience in the past was with CMC, with the men's colony, because some of the inmates were really horrific at just, they would flush entire blankets down toilets and everything else. So CMC had to develop basically these, they're not filters, but they're devices that basically will catch, you know, those types of things. And that might be part of the comments then too. You know, that's not paying us money, but that's making sure that at the park they're installing the types of equipment that they really need to install in order to not discharge into our system things that are prohibited. Our ordinances do prohibit, you know, illicit discharges and those types of things. So there's, you know, different ways to tackle that. Sometimes it's money, and sometimes it's them building facilities or equipment that they need to take care of. So, Director Oplogle, you'll forward me a copy, I guess, of
yes.
County Council's letter, and then maybe, I'm not sure how well you know the timing of the EIR. I'm not very aware of.
I'm not sure when the next public comment period is.
Okay. So we can probably look into that as well in order to see what type of timing.
I believe it's on their website.
Okay. Because that gives us an indication of when we need to be back in front of the board for some agenda item.
Yeah. Anybody got anything else?
It's kind of interesting that County Council sent that letter because when we had been meeting with the County Planning Department on it, there was certain reticence of the planners of commenting. And I can only speculate, but I'm guessing that that discussion kind of went around internal to the county, and it might have been determined that the best place for a comment letter to come would have been out of County Council's office, as opposed to County Planning or County Public Works or any of the operating departments.
I move that we adjourn.
Second. Adjourned.